This is an interview with Mrs. Ray Jones of Hazel Court, Sketty Park, Swansea, recorded on the 13th of October, 2014. The interview is connected to the All Our Stories series and the White Rock Digital Trails project. The interviewers are Janet and Tudor Price. So, Mrs. Jones, can you tell me the year you were born, please?
1923.
And where you were born?
In Saltwick Crescent in St. Thomas.
St. Thomas. And you lived your early life in St. Thomas?
Yes, first of all, up until I think I was a couple of months old, we lived in St. Hilda's Crescent, and then we moved for a little while to Kilvey Terrace in St. Thomas. And then when I was three, they were building the new Grenfell Park Estate, and my father bought a house there. And from the age of three until I was 23, I lived in Lidford Avenue, Grenfell Park. Mm.
So where did your father work?
He worked in Baldwin's, King's Dock.
King's Dock, yeah. So he was he a tin plate worker or steel?
Tin plate. He was in the end, he ended up what they call a behinder in the steelworks, which was very interesting. As a little girl, he took us round to see exactly. I wouldn't have liked to work there. It was very, very hard work. Very, very hard work indeed. Mm. Used to come home, you know, absolutely soaking with perspiration. And I can remember that my mother used to make salt water drinks. Used to drink salt water to put the salt water back into his system, because when they used to wear what they called short shirts made of Welsh flannel. Mm. And when the perspiration used to dry on that, it used to dry white. Exactly, you know, when you've been in the sea.
Yeah.
And the sea water have dried on anything. And I can remember as a little girl, they used to be stiff with perspiration, so he took me to see exactly what he was doing as a job. Very, very well paid. But I would call it slave labour in this day and age. It's dreadful.
And was he always in work, or do you remember?
No, the only time he was out of work was strikes.
Right.
And I remember as a little girl, in those days they didn't have strike pay always.
No.
So it was a case of having to live on your savings.
So was your father from Swansea, or...?
No, my father originated from Tonner, outside Neath, the family there. And
what was your maiden name, please? Jenkins.
And your father's name then was?
My father was Archie Jenkins.
Yes. And yeah. your mother's name?
My mother's maiden name was Catherine Lucy, and Lucy was her surname.
Unusual.
Yeah. Caused a lot of problems for her, I'm afraid, when she got older.
Where was she from?
She was from the Harvard. And I think my mother and father met because my mother was called up during the First World War, like they had to, and she went to work in the works. And she met my father there. It was either the munition works. People were called either to do munitions when the men went to the war, but my mother was opted into Baldwin's and met my father, as they say there.
So your father wouldn't have gone to war because he was...
My father was in the Navy.
Right.
In the Royal Navy, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember?
Came out of the Navy, and as I say, got married, had a son, and then 4.5 years afterwards had a daughter, which was me.
So tell me something about life as a child there. Your father, you said, was well paid.
Very well paid, yes. We were, I suppose, for those days, quite comfortably off, really. Mm. I mean, he was buying his own house, as people did in those days. Mm. When I got older, I went to private commercial school. I finished off in commercial school. Mm. And used to have elocution lessons. Mm. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, we were comfortable.
Yes.
Not rich, but very comfortable. We could have the finer things
in life.
So
which school did you finish at?
St. Thomas. I went to St. Thomas School. Unfortunately, I was taken ill during the period which is now the 11 plus scholarship. So I missed quite a lot of school. They found out I had a heart condition. So I was home from school for quite a while, so I never sat my 11, my scholarship. So because I missed out on that, when I was 13, I didn't finish. When I was 13, my mother transferred me to a private school. So I went then to a commercial school.
Where was that?
Greg's School up on the hill.
Can you tell me exactly where that...
Upon Mount Pleasant.
Yeah. And you wore a uniform?
Yes, we had to wear a uniform, carry a satchel. And unfortunately, believe it or not, I didn't grow till I was 16. I was very, very, very tiny, and I think my satchel was nearly as big as me. And of course, in those days, even, you know, we were quite comfortably off. My mother used to give me money, first of all, the trams and then the buses, if it was raining, to go to a school, but I had to walk. My mother thought it was good for me to walk, so I used to walk from Grenfell Park up to Mount Pleasant to school. Stayed in to lunch. They did a, you know, you could buy your lunch there. We had lunch, but and I was there then till I was 14. I didn't quite finish. It was an 18-inch course, 18-month course. I didn't quite finish that because there again my heart condition flared up. And I missed school. So while I was home on the sick, much to my mother's disgust, I was writing for jobs.
Right, how would you compare yourself with other children who lived close by?
I think most of them, whether or not it was because the people had enough money to be buying their own houses, I suppose, at that particular time. And... well, there were some poor children in the class, because I can remember as a child they used to ask us for why shoes, I don't know, but particularly shoes. And if we had shoes that we'd grown out of, we used to have to take them to school. And I can remember my mother saying to me, "Now don't you ever dare tell another child she's wearing your shoes," because they would be given to the poor children in the class. And my mother didn't want me to be snobbish and say, you know, you're wearing my left-off sort of thing. So
was there any Welsh speaking at home?
My father. It was a strange thing, because my mother was from a bilingual family. My grandfather, who originated from Ireland, wasn't Welsh-speaking, but my grandmother, who was a Harvard girl around that area, and that's another long tale to tell, she was Welsh-speaking. So my mother was brought up to understand Welsh, but never spoke it. But when she went married my father, because they were all, Welsh was their first language, and as happens, when they met as a family, of course it was Welsh that was spoken, my mother could understand it, so she could answer them in English. She had the advantage over a lot of the sisters-in-law, because they couldn't understand what was going on. But you know, if anything was said that shouldn't have been said, my mother could understand it, the rest of them couldn't.
Okay, so your life in St. Thomas...
It was quite comfortable.
Yes. Yeah, and you said you went to the Forward Movement Chapel?
Yeah, we did,
and
yes.
Where was that?
On Danny Gray... Portennant Road. Portennant Road. There again, as they say, we went as children. Actually, we started off... My mother was Church of England. My father, obviously, was Welsh Chapel. So because Forward Movement was such a long way away in those days, no buses or anything, we had to walk from Grenfell Park. And of course there was a, as I say, 4.5 year difference between my brother and I. We went to Kilvey Church because it was too far for us to walk all the way down to the front, to Portennant Road. So we started off actually going to... Kilvey Church, but I think my grandmother, she was a darling, but she was a bit of a matriarch. And I remember my mother saying, she said to my mother, "Kate, now the children have gone to you at church for long enough. Jack, that was my brother, is old enough to take Ray to Sunday school." So we ended up going to the Forward Movement, which then was the family church. All my cousins, because my father originally was, they didn't all live, but my grandmother gave birth to 21 children. So my father had sisters who were old enough to be his mother, their mother. So my father had nephews and nieces older than himself. Mm. My father was the youngest one.
So did you see a lot of your extended family?
Oh, my father's family, we were very, very close. Very, very close. Because we were all involved with church life. Mm. You know, we used to go to Sunday school and they used to put the little operettas on once a year. And I was lucky enough to have the lead because I was taking elocution lessons. But the thing was, and it was always a joke, I can't sing. I haven't got a voice at all. They say Welsh people can sing, but that's no go as far as I'm concerned. And in the operettas, because the lead always used to, like they do in opera, used to have to sing. You've got the spoken word, and then you've got the music, and I couldn't sing. Oh, they'd struggle and struggle. So in the end, I had to do it in monologue. Music in the background. And then I had to say, you know, say the pieces because I just couldn't sing. Mm-hmm. So that's...
So would you describe the Forward Movement as a happy place to be?
Oh, yes, yes.
Lively and...
Oh, yes. There was a lot going on in my day. As I say, I was only saying the other day, we used to... there used to be a railway station down in past... The Midland, where the Midland station was, and we used to go there. We used to get on the train as a Sunday school crocodile, you know, the good little crocodile, and they used to take us to a little field in Aberdillis, where we used to have what was then the Wits and Treats. You'd have ice cream and sandwiches and games, and that was always on a Whitsun Monday. Mm. And of course, in those days, the weather was beautiful, you know, around the Whitsun time. And then, as I say, every year then Forward Movement used to put on a little operetta that was suitable, like about fairy princes and like toads and things, you know, all that sort of business. They used to put on an operetta because we had quite a lot of youngsters with good singing voices. Mm-hmm. And so we used to put on the operettas, as I say, and thinking about it, Forward Movement had a gallery like the big churches and chapels did in those days, and thinking about it now, they were absolutely packed jam with people, you know, put it on for 3 nights. And I often wonder, you know, where the churches have gone these days.
So did you meet your husband through church? Or?
No, I met my husband, I was as I say, because I wasn't medically fit enough to go to war when the war came. I had to do a job to replace a man who'd gone to the services, so I went to work on the dock as a wages clerk on the dock. And I met up with a girl there, and we got very friendly, and like you do, you used to go to each other's houses. And my husband was demobbed a year before his time because he was doing work, they said, of national importance. And because his parents had moved to Carmarthen, and Tom, of course, was called up from Carmarthen, he went to lodge with his aunt. And, of course, I was friendly with his cousin and going back and forth there. And because of the blackout, my... Marjorie, that was my friend, her mother used to say to Tom, you've got to take Ray home. That was then from the middle of town to King, I'd moved to King Edward's Road by this time. Mm-hmm. So of course he had to take me home, and then that's how it started. Like you do, he asked me if I'd go out with him, and I said yes I would, but I said I'm not hanging on street corners. If your first date, you've got to come and pick me up. So he knocks at the door and arranges to meet, and knocks at the door. And then my mother says, come in.
So as a teenager, what did you do for entertainment? Did you, obviously the chapel was important. But
yeah, I think mostly, and of course, as I say, I grew up through the war years, yes. You know, I was 16 when the war started. So there really wasn't a lot to do. I mean, we had the bombing. I mean, life was disrupted. I joined the YWCA, and then we used to do a bit of war work there. We used to, you know, make tea for the troops and things like that. A lot of Americans we had coming through at that particular time, and we were asked to host them, which we did. I used to take this one home for tea and that one home for dinner. My mother never knew who I was bringing home, whether, you know, a lot of them were Americans, either soldiers or airmen. I spent a lot of time in the YW. Unfortunately, I was out when Swansea was bombed. My mother was scared to death. My brother was out. I was out from Kilvey Hill. From Kilvey, of course, you could see all the town alight, which is absolutely devastating.
So where were you?
I was in the YWCA, which was on St. Helens Road, almost by the YM. It was one of those big houses, and we were down in the cellar. We didn't know, but there were quite a lot of people killed behind her because they dropped a landmine. So by the time it was time to come out and go home, Swansea was absolutely flat to get to Grenfell Park. I just had to walk through the rubble. Ben Evans had gone, all the shops had gone. It was devastating.
Was it noisy? Was it smoky?
Smoky, you know. I mean, you'd all... You can't describe it. I mean, it was just a shock to, you know, to go that evening and see all the nice buildings and stop and look in the shop windows, as women do, girls do, and then to come and just see all this, you know, all this rubble. We literally, there was no pavements, nothing. We just had to literally pick our way through the rubble from St. Helens Road all the way through Oxford Street, not so much because Wine Street wasn't bombed, it was the centre of the town.
Mm. Was there panic? Was there...
No. That was a funny thing. I don't know whether it was lack of realisation of what was going on, and people were stunned, but even when they were bombing the docks and we were in the shelter, there was never ever that sense of panic. Everybody was organised, and you know, we used to go down the shelter, hear the sirens going, and shelters, we were all given one in the bottom of the garden, and we stayed there till the all clear. And then I remember once coming out, and they dropped sendries on Kilvey Hill, and it was exactly like a Christmas tree, exactly like a Christmas tree. It was pretty. It was tragic, but pretty. You know, you had all these twinkling lights, I suppose they were trying for the dock, you see, and it misjudgment. And fortunately, they fell on the hill, not on the estate, the houses.
So did you have to sleep in the shelter?
Yes. My mother had, like, folded up blankets and pillows, and yes, we had to sleep. We had to stay in the... had to stay in the shelters.
Where your brother went to work? What did he?
Well, now my brother was in my brother was a country driver, in Baldwin's, but unfortunately for him, in one respect, he like they were doing these days with the threat of war, he joined the. Not the army, what did they call it, you know,
like
the reserves.
Territorials,
I couldn't think of the word. He joined the territorials. Well, he was in the territorials a year, and it's a strange thing was, he was going to camp on the weekend the war was declared. So, of course, he was opted straight into the army. And he was in the army for 12, 18 months. And then because he was working in Baldwin as a gantry driver, they called him back to work to do work of national importance. And while he was back, he had a very bad stomach hemorrhage, so he was off from work for about 2 years. But he never ever saw a lot, he never saw the war as such.
Mm. Okay, so living where you are, Grenfell Park, can you tell me anything about the river and life around the river? And
well, the strange thing was about that, because, as you know, Grenfell Park was built on the hill, which originally was the old Kilvey village, the village of Kilvey. And they built the houses on top of the hill, but there was a road leading from which, fortunately, the street we were living in, which was called Lidford Avenue, that ended, if you want to, for want of a better word, where the old village of Kilvey virtually started, if you can understand. And there used to be a little road that took you from the estate down onto, which was the main Foxhall Road, where the old village was, the village of Kilvey. And of course, on the one side, there was the Kilvey Church, which was built into the hill. And on the other side, then, you had the hill coming back up again, and they had cottages and things like that. Very narrow, would only take one car. And at the time, we were lucky, my father was fortunate enough to have a car. So, of course, we used to sort of wiggle away virtually. I mean, if somebody came in the other direction, you just had to back. It was literally enough room for one car. And then we ended up, as I say, in Foxhall Road. But when we used to go to see my grandmother before the days of the car, we used to walk down the main, which was then a main road, onto Foxhall, go down the river bank, and there used to be what they called the penny boat. Now there was a little boat there, and I think literally you paid a penny, I assume so, and then that took you from Foxhall Road across the river, and it ended up on the Harvard side of the town. Well, of course, my grandparents lived, or my grandfather, my grandmother had died, I never knew her. Of course, the family were in the Harvard. So, of course, in Savers going all the way round, down St. Thomas, over the bridge, up the Potteries, up the Strand, which was quite a walk, we cut off an enormous amount of distance. And then we got into the Harvard, went through a street, I think it was called Aberdee Berthy Street, and then it ended up then on the main road on which my grandfather lived, because my grandfather lived opposite the old Kinvelin Works. There used to be the old Kinvelin Works in the Harvard. And now my cousin reminded me of this. I'm not quite sure about it myself, but she said, Sandra is quite a number, she's 18 years younger than me. So how long the ferry boat ran, I don't know. Obviously, I mean, we moved from St. Thomas, and as I say, in those days, then we had a car, so we never used the ferry. But she said that in the winter, they had a sort of a pulley, which helped to, like, yes, a pulley to pull the... Now, I'm not very clear on that, but she seems to remember, because somebody at some time or the other had fallen overboard when the weather was bad. So for safety's sake, they installed this pulley. But it was a real thrill on a Sunday for some unknown reason. I don't know whether it's because I'm a Cancerian, but I love the water. I love being on it, I love being in it. And of course, as I say, my first really was to go on the ferry boat, because I must have only been about... I was three when we moved to Grenfell Park, so I must have only been about five or six or seven. You know, when we...
Do you remember boys swimming in the river?
Or? No, I don't.
No.
I don't remember.
No.
Boys swimming in the river. I know my brother used to swim in the docks. Because my brother's, they say, he's nearly 5 years older than me. And he was a good swimmer. My father was a good swimmer. I was just sort of two strokes and a bubble in those days. But no, I know my brother used to smoke. The boys used to. They used to swim in the dock.
Okay, so take me back now to the... you say you were a clerk in the docks as war work.
Yeah.
So were there many women there then?
Well, I was in the dog's office. Originally, the dog's office was down in the Midland, where the old labour office were, where people, dockers, used to clock in or go for work. But it was a strange thing. In the old days, the dockers used to work for different companies. I mean, you had all the different importers of wood. You had steel, you had coal. You had all the importers. Well, different companies obviously had different businesses. So what they actually used to do, say they'd work for 3 days for the GWR, perhaps getting pit props, offloading pit props. Then they'd go to another company then and offload coal. But every job that they had, they got paid at the end of that particular stint that they did. But I don't know whether it was because of the war or whether it was in the offing anyway. But they brought in a company called the National Dock Labour Board. And then what we used to do then, these different companies used to have to tell us how many hours the men had worked on each particular camp for each, but and we used to give them one payday. You see, you had something called, as I say, crouches and people like that, and that was our job. But whether it was brought in, as I say, because of the war, or whether it would, but it was something very new. We were the people that were called up, and there were men there as well who couldn't go to the services. And then, different from the old days where they used to go to the labour office and see if there was any work there, they had what they called a call system, and all the dockers used to meet in a big, big room. And then the dock's manager used to allocate different men for different jobs. You had trimmers, they called trimmers, you had riggers, you had dockers, well, pertaining to what job was available. He used to give the jobs out. Well, if they didn't work, then in those days they used to have 8 shillings in the morning and 8 shillings in the afternoon, so it was 16 shillings a day they used to get. And they had a guaranteed wage then at the end of the day. But the thing was, and it was really funny, because the dockers had been so used to having so many paydays a week, they weren't used to having their pay in one big lump. And of course, dockers were known for liking their little drop of beer. And they used to go into the bridge inn after work, and of course, if they had a pay packet, 3 days' pay, you know, it was lovely. But when it came to having pay at the end of the week, for ages they couldn't cope, and we used to have to, I can remember giving them a £10 advance. And we had to take that then. At the end of the week, then, because they borrowed £10 on the strength of their wages, we had to take it out of their wages with their national health and their tax and everything else. But it was really funny. You know, I mean, my father had always had one pay day. But as I say, they were used. They said they didn't like it. They didn't like having just one pay day at the end of the week. They liked it the old way, where they could just go down and have 2 days and get paid for that, and have 3 days and get paid for that. So it was very interesting. Yeah.
So the war ended, and you.
Well, actually, what actually happened? I was still working for the National Board. I'd got married. In the meantime, I'd met my husband and got married. And I was having my son, I'd become pregnant, but unfortunately I was ill from the time I conceived, virtually, and I had to give my job up.
But were you living in King Edward's Road?
Yes, what actually happened, I was 18 and I hadn't been well for ages, and I had this problem, and then they discovered that I had quite a bad heart condition. And of course, in those days, you had to climb Kilvey Hill. There were no buses or anything like that. So they told my parents the only thing for them to do was to try to move somewhere where it was flat. Well, of course, in Swansea, the only flat places we could get was old. So we moved from a modern house to an old-fashioned terraced house, you know, front room, middle room, kitchen, scullery. Fortunately, the one that we had was one of the newer old houses. We had our own bathroom. There was a bathroom built in. But, yes.
So King Edward's Road in those days, sort of community on its own, or there'd be lots of shops and...
Oh, yes, on King Edward's Road itself, yes, it was. Yeah. There was grocers there, bakers there, you know, and then you had Brynamore Road, which was just around the corner.
Yeah.
Well, even clothes shops, you know, there's two clothes shops there. I mean, Bynans had the cake shop and...
Rationing?
Paper shop, yeah, I remember rationing. Yeah. Actually, they were rationing when I... Still rationing when I got married. I was married in 47. And we still had coupons because, quite illegally, you had clothing coupons and they were buying coupons right, left and centre so that I could have some sort of wedding outfit.
There were ways of getting coupons.
Yes, quite illegally. It's the same as food. I think everything was black marketed when I had my, because I had a proper wedding cake. Unfortunately, when we lived in Grenfell Park, there was a master baker opposite, and he always said he'd make my wedding cake, and he did. So where he got the fruit, where he got the ice and sugar, we never asked. But I had a proper wedding cake.
So where were you married?
In St. James's Church. By that time, St. Thomas, of course, Forward Movement had been bombed. So, as I said, my husband was Church of England anyway, and St. Mary's, his family, his mother's family, were all Sandfields, William Street. So they'd all gone to St. Mary's as a family. But as I say, Tom was brought up in Carmarthen because his father's job had taken him to Carmarthen.
So your husband came out of...
My husband came out of the... because my father-in-law worked for Shellmex and BP, and they had a place in Carmarthen and they had the place in Landarcy. Well, he used to move from one place to the other. When I was courting Tom, he just come out of the army, and because his parents were living in Swansea when he was called up, and his job was in Swansea, he had to come back to Swansea. But in the meantime, through the war, his father had been moved back to Carmarthen. So in my courting days, I had to share my time. He had to go home weekends to see his parents. So we used to go home to Carmarthen. And so they lived in Carmarthen when we were married. But Tom was living with his aunt, in lodging with his aunt, in Richardson Street, in town.
So how did he then make a living?
My husband was working for, at the time, what was the name of the place? South Wales Builders.
Right.
South Wales Builders. He was a buyer in South Wales Builders. He used to buy in the commodities and one thing and the other, like.
Mm-hmm.
And then he changed his job after we got married, and he worked for a firm for years then, T.W. Thomas, and he was a buyer there to buy all the copper tubing and whatever.
Mm-hmm. So where did you live then as a young married couple?
As a young married couple, then we were lucky. We lived with my parents for 3 years because you couldn't get houses or anything like that, because of course Swansea was decimated. So the firm that Tom was working for, T.W. Thomas, there was a property opposite Old Swansea Hospital that years ago, there was a maple, there were a couple of shops there, you know where Joe's ice cream shop. Well, that corner had been bombed. Well, T.W. Thomas had the option of renting that property when it was rebuilt. And they rebuilt it then with a big flat on the top of it.
Right.
So, of course, because we were living with my parents, and because Tom, you know, had a decent standing in the job, they asked him if he'd like to have the flat.
Mm.
So we lived there for 20 years. And then Tom changed his job. T.W. Thomas, he moved on. And, of course, we had to buy a house then, didn't we? Because, of course, it was a company flat. And we bought a house then in Carnglass Road in Tico. Oh, lived there 40 years. And then I've ended up here.
So going back to the early 50s, I mean, what sort of life, social life, did people have then? Were there, did you still see a lot of your extended family, or were things changing?
No. Fortunately, we were pretty close as a family. I only had one brother. And it was a strange thing. You lose contact, but eventually my brother met and married a girl that was my friend in school, right, as a youngster, up until in junior school. Yeah. And fortunately, obviously Doreen and I got on, but the good thing was my husband got on with my brother and he got on with my sister-in-law. So of later years, when the children were grown up, we used to, four of us used to go on holidays together once we could leave the... I only had the one son, my brother had two children. And but my brother then was, he worked in Baldwin, but he was moved to Margam when Margam opened, so of course he had to go and live in Port Talbot. But it was nice because Jack and Doreen used to come and spend the weekend with us and go to the pictures or go to the theatre. And then we would go up and spend the weekend with them and go to the, they had the Bayview Club, you know, it was a club where they had.
So you say you went on holidays together. What sort of holidays did you have? Were those?
Quite a lot of nice holidays. Of course, you could go abroad then quite easily. And unfortunately, we did a couple of holidays with my brother to Italy and places like that. But then my brother had developed a heart condition and he had a triple bypass. So later years, Tom and I used to have to go on our own.
So do you remember your first flight, holiday flight?
I think my first holiday flight, to be honest, eight of us went. My brother had lived in a cul-de-sac in Port Talbot, on the Sandfields estate in Port Talbot. And because we used to go up there on weekends, of course we knew all his neighbours. You know, we got friendly with all his neighbours, and on a Saturday they used to... Tom never belonged to a club of any sort, but my brother belonged to the Bayview Club, which the people from the works used to meet. So, of course, we used to get involved with them, and the cul-de-sac that in which my brother lived, the people used to go to the club. So on a Saturday, it was a meeting ground. And in those days, I mean, they used to, you know, you don't remember Dickie Valentine, but all the big stars they used to have. You know, it wasn't sort of a low-down club. It was quite a nice class club. I'm not being snobbish.
Respect.
But it was... And the artists that used to have were quite well-known. And so we used to go up on a Saturday morning and stay till Sunday night. And we used to go... Well, this particular day, somebody had the bright idea. They wanted to go to Spain, because Spain in those days was just the place to go. Nobody went anywhere abroad but Spain. I mean, it was great to get on a plane and go to Spain. The only place that we had gone in an aeroplane was over to the Channel Islands. Tom and I and David was about 18, and I think that was the last holiday he had with us, you know. Mm. He wanted to go on his own then, and we went to Jersey. That the only plane, and you know they like what they joined together with sealing wax and string, you know, they tiny little things. So we decided then that my brother's friends decided they'd like to go to Magaluf. Now, I mean, that could have been the other end of the world for me. So we said yes. So eight of us went. That was my first flight, my first trip abroad was to Spain. But I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my type of holiday. No. Type of holiday Tom and I used to have. I'm not a sun worshipper. I can't sit in the sun, literally. I cannot. I've got the pigmentation. I just can't sit in the sun. I get heat stroke. So I got to keep out of the sun. I can sort of sit under an umbrella or something like that, but I can't sunbathe as such. So, of course, the hot climates were out. So Tom and I used to like to go to Greece and see a bit of the Greek history. And we were more for looking around churches and palaces and things like that, more that type of holiday. I mean, I was fortunate enough to travel quite a bit over the years, different countries, you know, I was really lucky.
So, I mean, your life, obviously, quite different from your parents' lives. I mean, your parents were quite well off, really. But could you remember, I mean, you talked about Sunday school, but had street parties and things like that gone by the time your son was...
Yeah, we didn't know.
No,
nothing like that.
Yeah. Do you remember Coronation Day? Was there anything special about that?
I suppose there must have been, really, but to be perfectly honest, that's quite hazy in my mind. I don't know whether or not it's because I'm not essentially a party animal.
Right.
I like company, but I'm not the one that likes to party at the drop of the hat, you know, or birthday parties
You're telling me in your childhood that obviously the chapel was a central part.
Was a central part of their life.
That then ends, doesn't it?
The trouble was it ended. I mean, we still went to church. I went up to be honest. I went up to church until I came here. But now, I mean, I cannot walk, as you say, I got a scooter. So, and the church down the bottom, I suppose I could take the scooter, but I haven't got involved because it's not my type of religion. You know, everybody to their own. I mean, I could go to Church of England and be quite comfortable because my brother-in-law, my husband's brother, was a lay curate. And they lived in Guernsey for years, and then they came to this country. But he was also ordained as a lay curate. So, of course, we've always, when we went up to stay with them, of course, we always went to, that was Church of England. Well, I was quite happy with that.
Yes.
But on the other hand, I used to go to the Baptist church, even though I was never baptised. I used to go to the Baptist church in... I'm very adaptable as far as religion is concerned. But I've always been a churchgoer, always.
So, bring it to a close. Clearly you said, although by your age now, you've done extremely well in terms of your health. But you had a difficult start, health-wise. Do you remember... the coming of the health service, or do you remember any changes?
No, not really.
No.
I suppose, in a way, I was lucky because what we couldn't have, my father could afford to buy. I don't want to sound snobbish, but now when I was having my son, I had great difficulties. I saw 3 consultants in a week. Now, we were able to afford for me to be able to have that sort of attention. So I would never have ever, whatever the national health or not national health, I don't say we were rich, but we were comfortable enough. I remember my brother wasn't well. He ended up with lobar pneumonia and we had a consultant to the house. I mean, I can remember things like that. As I say, we weren't rich, but we didn't feel the need. And I was only saying to people here, because you've got people here on benefits, and I said, well, thank God, I've been lucky that at 18 they found that I had a very bad heart condition. I was 46 when I was diagnosed with acute osteoarthritis. I have now got osteoporosis, and yet at 91 I look at myself, and I really do. Every day I count my blessings. I'm not being religious or anything like that, but I really do count my blessings because, you know, I've come a long journey, 91. I've had my ups and downs health-wise and everything. And the thing that I am more blessed with is the fact that I have still got my reason. I haven't lost my memory. I haven't done anything like that. Well, and that I am able to talk to you as I have spoken to you today.
And we're extremely grateful that you have.